Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Mana Pro Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Monday, May 7th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro. ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
If you have experienced the disappointment of broken or weak eggshells, try ManaPro's Oyster Shell. Adding oyster shell to your flock's feeding program helps provide the calcium they need for strong eggshells. So don't let those beautiful eggs go to waste. Try ManaPro's oyster shell for your pullets and layers.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com. Or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Today's early bird secret password is guinea. Today's early bird secret password is guinea. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com, or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. I was just thinking in the kind of the show entry, the intro there where it says broadcast around the world, we definitely mean that. We hear from people all around the world that listen to this radio show broadcast. In fact, today we've got one of those folks in the chat room, Andreas, from Norway. So he has become a regular listener here on the radio show and a regular participant in the ever so popular and fun chicken chat room that we've got going on live during the show. We have a lot of people, I mean tons of people that listen that can't participate in the chat room live every day. Their workplace either blocks it or their computer won't pull it up or just many different issues. So we thank you for listening. We do try to, when there's something funny going on in the chat room or a question, we try to get that on the air so those who are unable to participate in the chat can enjoy the chat room a little bit anyway. But no, you can't replace being in the chat room, that is for sure. It is a Monday, but don't let that get you down, because like we always say, if you can tune in every day here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, not only will your day go by faster, but the week will go by faster, and next thing you know, it's Friday, where we're celebrating Fun Friday. You've learned a lot during the show about homesteading and backyard poultry and urban gardening, farming, cooking, different breeds of chickens, the whole nine yards. So hang tight. I guarantee you Friday will be here before you know it, and we'll be ready for another weekend. We had a really fabulous weekend this weekend, but before we get into some host chat or our host chat segment, it looks like it's time to bring on, you know who's here today? You're right. You guessed it. You're 100% correct. It's the one and only co-host, poultry advocate, author, and compost queen herself, Pat Forman. Hey, Pat, how you doing?
Hey, Whisper, I'm doing great today. Boy, it's marvelous Monday here, and my garden's all planted. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, life is good. Hey, I was so glad. You know, I've been trying to decide, and I've been going back and forth. And today, when you said guinea, I decided that's my clue. I'm going to set some guinea eggs under my hen.
All right.
So thanks for that inspiration from the God knows where that came from.
No problem whatsoever. You're going to have to keep us informed when you're able to come on the show how that's going and how that works.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll probably set them next week and then make sure they're fertile and then slip them under a broody hen. I haven't had any hens go broody yet, have you?
No, definitely.
Yeah, it seems like it's a little early, although I hear other people have, and I've given fertile eggs to folks for their broody hens, but I don't have any yet.
When we had silkies and saramas,
a daily thing.
But, I've never, ever in a decade had a Rhode Island Red go broody, ever. I've had a Buff Orpington go a broody, and I've had a Light Brahma go broody, but that's pretty much the extent of my large fowl breeds that I've experienced going broody in the past. But just you can't go wrong with those silkies and saramas going broody. That's for sure.
You can't get the silkies off of them. I have one friend that has bred silkies crossing game hens of all things, and so they got some size, a little bit of size to them, not a lot, but some, they just sit and then they switch eggs out and they keep just like three or four sets of eggs they'll put under these super setters. Mm-hmm. That doesn't sound like it's fair to them, does it?
No. Doesn't. Walter says his silkies are always broody. Yeah, exactly. When are they not? So you're right, it is Monday, but don't let that get you down. Like I said, Friday will be here before you know it, and we have another great show today. Every Monday we have Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown, and today when we bring him on last week was really supposed to be the wrap-up of the Art of Incubation, but we took questions. I just felt compelled. I don't know. I had just a whim that we needed to take questions from our fans, and we did, and it ended up being a fabulous show. But today we're going to wrap up, I'm pretty sure, the Art of Incubation today. We may have a little time at the end to give away or actually to take some questions from our callers and our fans in the chat room. But also, He'll have a prize that he's going to give away. Remember, we had a riddle last week that nobody knew, so we're going to have that same riddle today, so hopefully we'll get that answered. Maybe a few more clues for the riddle if people are still having a hard time with it, because there's a great prize associated with that. And we're going to be giving away a Hen Saver Hen Apron. Pat, over 10,000.
Oh, I love those.
And so over 10,000 have been sold. It's absolutely crazy.
Really?
Over 10,000. And let me tell you this, it's interesting, and of course we love our sponsor, Crazy K Farm, but let me just explain something to folks before you waste your money. And if you let me know if this is wrong statement, but I've heard from people, many people, I've experienced myself, that there is the Hen Saver Hen Apron from Crazy K Farm, and then there were the others, and I say the others because people will often take and her design is patented, so if you want to avoid a lawsuit, you can't copy her design and whatnot. She's already had to go after a couple folks for copying her design, but because it is patented, yes. And so
they would go after them and then try to sell them commercially.
Yes,
is that what happened?
That's exactly
well,
right.
Well,
and
good for her.
The problem about that, though, is they don't, and they haven't done the research on the quality of fabric. And I don't even want to call it fabric because it is so heavy duty. It's almost like a Kevlar vest. And so people will go to Walmart and they'll get some fabric and they'll make these and put a little cotton padding inside. And it'll based on weather, based on the roosters and their sharp claws and the talons and everything else, just mm-hmm. and the spurs. It's not going to last. I guarantee you. So she's put years of research in finding the product, finding the material, and so it's and you'll see if you've ever actually bought one or have won one from Crazy K Farm and then go and try to buy a copy of her style, then you will definitely see a quality difference and a difference in how long they will actually last based on the quality of materials. But we're actually going to give one of those away as well today on the radio show, in addition to the riddle we have. Had a great weekend, Pat. It was really fabulous. And let's see, we actually had a wonderful Friday evening, and then Saturday morning we woke up when we woke up. And no alarm clock, no nothing like that. Just it was still pretty early, but we just woke up when we woke up. Got the family ready, and we hang on just a sec. And we went out, and I'm just really excited about the upcoming Chicken Whisper tour. It's kind of a book tour / meet our fans tour, and we're still going 100% as if it was going to take place in mid-July. Still looking forward to that. Still heading forward and getting things checked off our list for this tour. And so we actually woke up Saturday morning, and we headed up to the largest camper dealership in the state of Georgia as far as number of sales, and took a look around there. In fact, there were actually three camper dealerships at this one exit off of 75. So we stopped at all three. And we took a look around and looked at different floor plans and what would meet our needs on the road for not just this tour, but vacationing and tours in the future. So we're definitely looking forward to that. And so that was a fun Saturday doing that. And we had to look at getting the tow vehicle actually up to par where we can tow a heavy load and what we want to incorporate in the tow vehicle, things like that. So it was a really fun weekend. We had a great time there yesterday. The church we attend celebrated their 100th anniversary. So the church was founded in 1912, and here it is 2012. So yesterday was a great day. Had a nice service with the house was packed, and the old pastors had come by and whatnot, and former members that had moved away. So it was a fun time yesterday, and then we pretty much came back here. And then just kind of, we were going to go look at some more campers yesterday, but there were some storms coming through. And of course, with our luck, we didn't get a drop of rain here at the homestead. They just kind of went north of us or south of us. But so we didn't want to get out in the storms looking at campers in the rain. So we just kind of hung out here and got some work done around here, getting ready for the week. So we did have a really fabulous weekend. We're just going full steam ahead regarding this July tour. I think many of you have already heard. If not, kind of mark your, if you live along the route right now, and it may change, this is tentative. We're looking at starting roughly in Atlanta, heading out I-20 towards Dallas, making stops along the way. And then once we get to Dallas, we'll probably head up to Oklahoma City and then head up to St. Louis, kind of angle over to St. Louis, come back over towards Virginia. We actually there's a fan who's I've helped, and she's having a little trouble getting the council to listen to reason regarding backyard chickens. And so in fact, she sent me a little message saying they've stopped returning her emails, they're not returning her calls, they're not wanting to listen to reason. In fact, they've kind of told her, I don't know if they've actually verbally told her to leave them alone or to go away. It's in her email. So I told her that we just may have to put Virginia Beach on the stop when we do this in July and go and talk with her, I don't know if it's county commissioners or city council. And then from Virginia Beach, head on down the coast, down 95, through the Carolinas, back down through Georgia, of course, stopping in Savannah at GQF, and maybe actually ending the tour at Brincy down in Titusville, Florida. So hopefully we can do that in about a 7-day period in July. If it takes 10 days, then it takes 10 days. We'll just have to map it out and see. So full steam ahead for that. Really looking forward to that. And it'll be we've toured a lot in the last 4 years. In fact, for April, we were only home about 8 days. But it'll be the first time we've actually done the camper thing, the travel trailer, fully self-contained, and so we can, stop at Tractor Supplies and feed dealerships and things like that, and stay there overnight, and without a camper hookup specifically, because it'll be self-contained. So definitely looking forward to that and meeting all our fans. So once we have the route 100% in stone and the dates, what we're going to do, Pat, is we're going to ask for our fans to actually let us know if they live along that route. And then what we're going to do is try to schedule some stops at some of our fans' houses, their homes, and meet them and take a look at their coops and see their setup so they can brag about that, see what kind of breeds and chickens they have. And, of course, we're going to try to videotape this all along the way. We did a little bit of videotape last weekend when we went to look at campers. Haven't got that up on YouTube yet, but we plan to hope and hopefully video the tour and put all that on YouTube each time we stop. So we're definitely looking forward to that. Full steam ahead, and we're hoping that this is going to, I'd say even now, still a 50-50% chance that we're going to get this done in July. We're definitely looking forward to it. Even if we don't decide on what camper we want and have to rent one, we're still planning on doing this in July. So looking forward to that and having fun planning that. So, Pat, what did you do this weekend?
What I do this weekend. I had so much fun this weekend. There was a competition that's sort of the weekend athlete kind of thing where they have kayaking or canoeing, biking and running, and you just make teams for whoever will do it. And we even have handicapped people that are so inspiring that they're just awesome. So I went to that Saturday morning. And then had a great dinner Saturday night with folks I hadn't seen for quite a while that I'd met at the race. And then this morning I got a call from my neighbor with a really husky kind of squeaky voice going, "Pat, there's a snake in my dryer's drawer. Can you come get it out?" In her clothes dryer, she has a drawer underneath the clothes dryer.
Oh, right.
Storage cabinet. Yep. That little snake was in there. So she was afraid to do that. Just staying over. So I don't snakes don't bother me, but I'm not really good with them or anything. So anyway, I went down and got it out and let it loose along the creek. It was just a little black snake, about 3 feet long, sweet little thing, really. But it was so funny because I hadn't talked to her for months and months and months. But I guess I was the only one around. So that was fun. We had a lot of fun with that, believe it or not. Anyway.
So what did you do?
That was kind of my weekend. I didn't turn the computer off all weekend. So now I'm only 200 emails behind.
How did that right there with you? How did you get rid of the snake?
Oh, well, black snakes are not aggressive, and they help keep copperheads away. And we have seen a couple of copperheads here at Greenway. So it was all curled up. So I had a little snake and kind of a stick and pulled its little head up. And then I had a big trash can there with some grass at the bottom. So I got its little head up on that stick, and then its rear end was kind of dragging on it. So I just picked it up and then kind of tried it open. gently placed it in the can. It's very anti-dramatic. No strikes, no hissings. I mean, no anything. I'm saying, I'm not going to hurt you. You got to trust me. I'm not going to hurt you. And then let it out just along the stream. So I think it was kind of happy to get out. But it was a pretty cool place it had. I mean, a little nice
warm spot
beneath the dryer. Yeah.
Had it been there a long time, do you know? Could you tell?
I have no idea. I told her she better plug up her dryer vent, though. Chances are pretty good it would be back. You know, we had a black snake that we named Lily. And we'd just hang around up and back, or it would curl around the hose where you hang the hose on that little holder outside. It loved to curl around that hose for some reason. And just never bothered anybody, just kind of hung around. Of course, we didn't have many mice or rats, but we hardly ever do anyway. But anyway, they're just startle factors, the thing with the snakes. You know, it's like, ah! There's something about that. So that was my morning. That's kind of the kickoff to my week here, this Linda. So anyway.
You heard it here first, folks. When we introduce Pat now on the radio show, we're definitely going to have to introduce her as the Snake Whisperer.
Oh no! I did not get close enough to do any whispering. I can assure you that. No. No, leave that one off. Compost is enough. But some snakes give me the heebie-jeebies. You know, they've got these the pythons that they show pictures of, these big wide heads, and their little tongues dash out, and they're huge. Ooh, something about those that are a bit much. I guess, though, they don't come up here this far north, but you have them there in Georgia, do you?
Hey,
these pythons are...
want to even think about it. I'm not a, if let's just say if I see any snakes on my property, they're going to have a very quick death from lead poisoning. And I'm not.
They'll shoot them? Even blackheads? Do you have blackheads down there? I would think you would.
Just, you know, yeah, we got rat snakes and stuff to keep the rats down, things like that, and corn snakes and what, you know, but yeah, if I can identify it, I'm not going to try to get close enough to identify it, and if there's any inkling that it may be a bad or poisonous snake, it's a goner. Bottom line.
Yeah. Well, that's what I say. The farmers, in fact, a couple of people have asked me different farms if I had snakes from around our farm, because I'd always relocate them. I say, well, next time I'll let you know. But they want them because they really do keep the rats down.
Right.
Yeah, and copperheads. They will keep copperheads away. And that's a big thing.
I've heard that where was it? I think it was somewhere in Georgia where they've started to see a few copperheads because the lack of rain right now, and they're starting to head out and move and look for moisture and water. So, yeah, it's going to be one of those things. I'm definitely going to have to... just keep an eye out when I'm down in the garden and whatnot. So,
yeah, the little garden snakes—they're kind of cute. Hey, there's a question in the chat room. It says, "Do snakes attack chipmunks?" And I just pulled out an article about how T-Rex, you know, chickens have the genes of Tyrannosaurus Rex, and how they found evidence recently that Tyrannosaurus Rex had feathers. So that was in Discover Magazine, I think it was. So isn't that interesting? Now when I hear my roosters there, they make some of those really weird calls out in the backyard. I think, oh, I really do have a dinosaur there in my backyard. Some of them, you look around the corner, you wonder what you're going to see, you know?
Exactly. Well, we know for a fact that chickens will eat small mice, possibly small rats if they can catch them. So if they could catch a chipmunk, yeah, I would say I don't see why not. I've never seen it firsthand, but if they're going to be eating anything that they eat small snakes, so I have no doubt in my mind that if they could catch it, they would actually have a meal off of that chipmunk. So
yeah.
No problem there at all. Hey, it looks like we've got Peter in the queue now, so let me get over here to the switchboard, and if I can push the right button and the computer cooperates, let's go ahead and welcome Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor, to the radio show. Welcome, Peter.
Hey, Andy. How you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. Can't complain. Just hanging out and doing the show here. Excited and glad that you were here to kind of wrap up the art of incubation today. And, of course, we've got the riddle from last show that nobody was brave enough to tackle. Or maybe we had a few. And then so we've got that again with the prize from last week we'll be doing here about 1 o'clock. And then towards the very end of the show, we've got a Hen Saver Hen Apron that we're going to be giving away as well. So if you were here on time and happened to catch the early bird secret password, then you'll be eligible to win that prize. If you were not here early and on time, well, then let me find it here.
Yeah, well, then just remember that I'm going to set guinea eggs under my hens this next week or so.
Na, 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 na. Gotta love it. So you'll be eligible to win that Hen Saver Hen Apron. So yeah, I told folks that would may, if we had time, take a few questions for you, Doc, towards the end of the segment. But we definitely want to kind of wrap this series up, The Art of Incubation, with you and mark that off the list and get to some other topics here this summer.
All right. Well, we can start out by just a real quick review of what we were talking about probably a week before last, because we didn't do much talking about it last week. We did a little bit. But we had talked about the embryo developing in basically 3 different layers on top of the yolk, and that it was the ectoderm, mesoderm, and the endoderm that all different systems of the bird developed from those. So what I thought I'd do today is fairly quickly just give you a brief rundown of what kind of development takes place on a day-by-day basis.
Awesome.
You know, with the development of the embryo as it starts to develop in the shell. And one of the first things you're going to see from the first day of incubation. Now, we do have to go back and clarify that basically after the first 24 hours out of the egg, that egg is technically 48 hours into incubation in one way or another. But you'll start to see the central nervous system starts to develop. Excuse me. And then there is some blood and some small veins that start to develop within the first day or so of incubation outside of the bird's body. And I just want to go back and say this is why it's important to handle eggs that are fertile, kind of like with kid gloves. It's to your advantage to do so. But if you don't, you'll reap the benefits of that when you go to pull your hatch and you find out half of them aren't hatching for one reason or another. So if you don't treat them right in the beginning, they'll not treat you well as a general rule in the end.
Mm-hmm.
The embryo really starts to develop in the second day of incubation. We start to see the formation of the heart, and we actually have a heartbeat present at about 30 hours of incubation, give or take. There are so many things going on in the beginning because now all of these little layers are starting to do their thing. But we have the amnion, which is the transparent sac that the bird ends up in with the fluid and so on developing. We've got ears starting to develop. We've got eyes starting to develop. The brain is starting to show itself and so on, all within the second day of incubation. So you can see how fragile these things would be, and they are developing at this point. They're not fully formed. By the third day, in actuality, the esophagus has started to grow,
mm-hmm.
Amongst other things. The allantois is starting to develop further. The embryonic respiratory system starting to go. The kidneys are starting to get functioning, however minutely this might be. Okay, And then we talked the other day about, you know, three times of the during the incubation process that you really don't want to handle the eggs, and the fourth day was one of those. And that the reason for that is that the allantois now is starting to really develop outside the bird's body, this microscopic body that we have at this point. And it attaches itself to what eventually becomes the cloaca of the bird, okay? And if you're spinning an egg around and everything else and you break that, then you end up with a dead embryo in the shell. The fifth day, the proventriculus, we've talked about the proventriculus in previous shows. It's the true glandular stomach of the bird, and the very formidable gizzard starts to form. That's all on the fifth day. By the sixth day, the embryo starts to take on the likeness of a bird. It will start to in the beginning, it kind of just looks like anything, and then by the sixth day, it starts to really start to take on some of the look of an actual bird. There may be some movement of the embryo at that point as it develops, and the very beginnings of the legs and the wings will start to develop there. And the seventh day, the cheek will start to form, and we had said that this was would come from the endoderm, or the inner layer of cells that were forming. You may or may not, depending on the position of the embryo within the shell, may be able to see the beginnings and the forming of the toes. And they usually look more whitish. The very tip of it will look more white, and that's how you can make the distinction of it at that very early age. Around the eighth day, the feather tracts will start to appear. The eyes become more prominent. The eyes actually look like they're taking up a tremendous portion of the head, which in a sense they do. Then we come up to the ninth day. The bird again starts to take on more of the shape of a real bird, getting closer past at 9 days, past one-third of the way to being hatched. The allantois, which is, again is the clear sac that the bird would be in, practically surrounds the bird and the yolk. By the tenth day, the wings are more pronounced. The toes on the feet are separated now. In the beginning, they kind of look like they're all one. So they're starting to split apart, and this would be by the tenth day. Not much happens between the 11th and 12th day. Growth is pretty much the same thing. Further development of the legs, the feet, the wings, the skull becomes more prominent as well. We get down to the 13th day, the down starts to appear all over the bird's body. It's kind of a neat thing. I don't know if anybody's ever seen every picture. I've got all of these pictures, and they will all be in the book when it's done. And did some work on the books over the weekend. And but it's awesome. Kind of neat to see all of this stuff.
You say by the 13th day they're starting to get fuzzy.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. That's less than 2 weeks.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, if you just think about it, stuff has to happen pretty quickly because once all of the development takes place and all of the organs are finished growing to what they're going to grow to and so on, from that point on, it's growth in size of the embryo itself. So a lot of the early stuff has to happen early, get going, complete itself so that it can, you know, move on to the growth phase. And we'll start to get into that in a minute. You'll start to see by the 15th day, the intestines are well developed, and around the 16th day, their scales are on the legs already. The end of the nails will become more sharp, like we see them when they're hatched out, fully hatched out. The albumin from the egg at this point, when we talked about incubation in the beginning, we said it was a controlled loss of moisture, too much moisture being lost, and the embryo ends up dying and sticking to the shell too much, and it drowns in the shell and that kind of stuff. So it's a very critical time, again, at that point in time around the 16th day. And the yolk at this point is a critical part of the nutrients for the bird as it develops. And we're coming up again now on the 17th day. We talked about this a couple of weeks back. Maybe people have forgotten, maybe not. But we talked about not handling the eggs on the 17th day.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons, the main reason for this, there are other things going on at that time, but the main thing going on is the embryo now being close to being ready to be hatched, is preparing and positioning itself within the eggshell to eventually spin around in the shell and force the shell apart and hatch out into a viable chick. So we don't want to interfere with it at that point in time. We don't want to get it disorientated by spinning it around, trying to see if there's anything going on inside of the eggs. My personal philosophy is if you don't have to mess with them after the early looking of the eggs for, you know, early deads and stuff, I just leave them alone. But that's just the way that I look at things. We get up to the 19th day. This embryo now, should have mentioned this before, pretty much, you know, fully developed. The scales of the legs are complete. The toes and the toenails are complete. The chick tooth is visible at this point when you get up around that 18th, 19th day. Bird's positioning itself for getting out of the shell. On the 19th day, again, another reason why you don't want to really touch them after this point in time, no need to really. But the yolk sac starts to enter the bird's body. And at this point, the bird actually starts on the 19th day to breathe on its own. It will puncture the air cell and start to breathe the air that's there, and that the air that comes through the shell and the air exchange of gases within the incubation system. On the 20th day, the allantois starts to retract itself, and the circulation of the through the allantois and stuff ceases, and the bird starts to really breathe on its own almost 100% at that point in time. And then on your 21st day, you have your hatching. The proper way for a bird to hatch is with the head under the right wing, using the chick tooth or pipping through the eggshell, and so it'll have the head under the right wing, and then it will bring its legs up under its head to help push that shell apart and push that off, and voila, 21 days, you've got a finished product. Hopefully they're healthy after they've dried off, and will serve the purpose that they were intended to serve in the beginning. It's an incredible process. I don't do it that much justice by what I've said here. There's a lot more to it. But that's the basics of what happens basically every day through the entire cycle until you have a viable chick in your hand or a whole trayful of chicks, whichever the case may be. And again, we stopped turning them to around that 18th day for various reasons, and we don't want that disorientation. Because if the bird becomes disorientated in the shell in any way, shape, or form, they usually become a late dead or a bird that can't get out of the shell and stuff like that. So just one more reason, to leave them alone and let them do their thing on their own. You had a question, Pat?
Yeah, I did, Peter. Last hatch, I had a little baby chick that had a wry neck. It's the first that I recall ever having. It was just, it couldn't stand up. And it was that something that was from nutrition from the parents, or was it because it didn't get out of the shell in time? Or what causes wry neck?
Yeah, my guess on that, and certainly there's always something that can cause, but usually those kinds of abnormalities are caused probably by a nutritional thing.
That's when I looked it up. But poor thing. I mean, he couldn't. I just went ahead and put him down. He couldn't. He wasn't going to do any good at all.
Yeah, like I said before, I said last week in some conversations we had that doing certain things with these birds, the once they get behind, they unless you're keeping it for a pet and you've got the time to take care of it. As a general rule, they just don't catch up with their hatchmates at all. They're mm-hmm. always unthrifty. They're always behind.
They're small. They're wimpy.
Yep, small. They generally, you always have to generalize because there's always an exception to the rule for the most part. But, these things, they never lay eggs or they never put on enough weight to go in the pot or wherever you're trying to do with them. Or never just a good saleable chick that you'd be proud to say to somebody that you hatched it out and it was yours and whatever. And then some people keep them as pets, and that's fine too. But a lot of things, will depend on the breeding stock. It's been quite some time since we talked about, the beginning stuff where we talked about, getting your breeders and in shape. But it is an essential part of the whole hatching process, poor, weak, or old, and unkept breeders will give you, poor quality chicks. Time and time again, the older the flock, usually, the worse it gets. So no different than humans. As we age, as humans, we lose in many cases the ability to get all of the nutrients that we need out of our food. No matter how well you eat, no matter what, it's just part of the, the human process of aging and moving on. Birds are no different. You can, do like a lot of humans do. Supplement your diet with this, that, and the other thing, and it helps your overall health and well-being. Well, the same thing, when you're dealing with the breeders, and. It's that old thing. If you don't start out on the right foot, you end up on the wrong foot. It's kind of funny. I didn't find out how uncoordinated I was until I got into cardio rehab. I'll tell you.
Yeah. Well, now if the older eggs are you said the eggs from older hens tend to be less thrifty. I'm not sure what word to use. Could you say then that eggs from pullets have a higher fertility or more good foot chicks?
They may up until a certain point, or even early on, the egg size of a young pullet may be too small, so therefore the chick will be small. The hatching of the bird is dependent upon the size of the egg as far as how big the bird will be, how much it's going to weigh, and its overall overall condition. But there's no question that if the breeding stock is older, that there can be, and in many cases, 'cause I deal with it every day. People call, and most of the time, most of the problems are self-inflicted.
I find that's true for me personally, too.
Yeah, a little bit is good, and a whole lot must be better. And it isn't. Oh, in some cases it works, and you can get away with it, you know. And other cases you can't. But you know, I always try to tell everybody that you know, be reasonable about what you do, and it'll generally get you by. And doing something about an abnormality is better than doing nothing.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, I deal with that every day. People are afraid to make a move, you know, and then end up with either a dead chicken or a chicken that's going to be debilitated for the rest of its life when it didn't really have to be that way. But
yeah. But one thing too, to be really, because this hatch was mostly eggs that I bought from another place.
Okay.
And I. Per what you said earlier, too, I really wasn't impressed with their management technique, and I know they weren't really organic or supplemental mm-hmm. in their feeding systems. And the hens, a lot of the chicks that came out just were, they were not really quality.
What we would normally call dumpy.
Yeah, dumpy? Is that
yep.
is that a scientific term?
Yeah, it's a scientific term.
Dumpy. Well, I had some dumpy.
But it's indicative of what goes on.
That's one of the seven dwarfs.
Yeah, you know, people in chickendom it is.
And sleazy. Yeah,
But people try to cut back on feed when things get tight. I've seen it time and time again. I've seen situations where I've tried to help and people. You know, were clamoring they couldn't take care of the disease problem they had, and then you know I helped with that in various ways, and then you know they're calling you back. They got another problem because they went and bought some other birds. You know, well if we didn't have enough money to take care of the existing problem, why did we go and get more birds? I think a lot of people are hoarders with chickens, just as they are with dogs, cats, and other things.
Yes, they are. Yeah. I tend to be one of them, which I have to really discipline myself.
But, you know, hoarding them and taking care of them is a whole lot different than hoarding them and not taking care of them, and that does exist.
Yes, my birds are healthy. I mean, they're very happy.
I knew that. I knew that. Yeah. But you know, it's the same thing. You're getting back to your pullet question. Something there that's worth throwing out is that those eggs will probably hatch because they are smaller and because they are
right.
younger, will probably hatch closer to the 21-day time frame than will eggs that are from older breeders.
Right.
Because those eggs have a tendency to be a little bit larger. And eggs that you are holding... waiting to get enough eggs to put in incubation. When you get out to seven, when you get out
to a week holding the older
eggs. Yeah, there
eggs.
You go. I just can't think here.
You're doing pretty good.
You want to get for when you're out at 7 days of age, you want to add another couple of hours maybe to the incubation. In other words, you'd be looking for them to go at least the 21 days, 2 hours or so if you're counting real close. And after you get out past, for every day past that, this is just a rule of thumb. I mean, everything is relevant. If the breeding flock is really, really in good shape and has been well tended to, you know, some of this may not apply, okay? Again, going back to what I said in the beginning, a lot of this, you know, it's an art and it's a science. The science has all been figured out for you. The art part is you and how you
yes.
handle it and look at it and deal with it and make adjustments and that kind of thing. But you can usually figure about adding for every day past 7 days that it'll probably take another half an hour. That's a general rule of thumb.
And that's a half an hour per day past seven.
Half an hour per day past. In other words, if you had an 8-day egg, you'd put 2.5 hours. You would think that they would hatch 21 days, 2.5 hours, 9 days, 21. You know, and so on.
Interesting.
And
wow.
when breeders are generally, and this is a general thing, again, because I've seen certain breeds of birds not hatch worth a hoot in their second year, and there are others that will hatch very well. But we normally, you could look at birds that are in their second year of producing hatching eggs, could take as much as 6, 7, 8, 9 hours more, to hatch. And again,
really?
Yeah, part of it's shell density, part of it's the size of the egg, how the egg has been handled, whether they were preheated, how well they were kept during the holding period. You know, a lot of people just shove them in the refrigerator. If you're going to do that, I'd like to see people, raise the humidity level up in that refrigerator up to, maybe 80-85%. And, again, going back and looking at this fine line stuff of this, that, and the other, your room where you're going to be running your incubator should be a very stable, even temperature that's pretty much the same day in, day out. The humidity of that room, I'd like to see it, 30-50% somewhere in that range. And again, that depends on the climate in your place. In my office, it happens to be very dry here in the office on many occasions. And I spoke to that a week or so ago by putting certain liquids in bottles and having it knock your socks off with the shock it gives you back just from the static electricity.
Yeah. Anytime my cats turn static, I could rub them and put them on the ceiling. That's when I got to get the humidity up.
Well, that's a good way to do it. That's basically it. It's going to be the quality of the breeding flock, the quality of the eggs you're setting, the age of the eggs that you're setting, the temperature of the egg when you set it. Because if you're setting an egg that you just took right out of the refrigerator and you're putting it into the incubator, number one, you're shocking these embryos, and you could cause early deads that way. And you're also going to pull down the overall temperature in the incubation unit for a period of hours till those eggs warm up. So it's a lot easier if you take the eggs and have them up to, I would take the eggs for 12 hours or so, maybe a little bit more, and put them in a room that's 70 degrees, let them sweat, and let them pick up some moisture, let them slowly acclimate to that 70-degree room before you shove them in an incubator at 99 degrees or 100 degrees or whatever you're running your incubator at.
Right. But, Peter, we never refrigerated our eggs. I thought that was a no-no because
if you've got a nice, cool basement, that has mm-hmm. a temperature, under that 70 degrees, the closer you get to 70 degrees, the more embryo development you get. And so you want to keep it below that, an optimal temperature, but you're wanting to. I would like to see the temperature myself under 60 degrees, and that way it keeps the embryo.
Okay.
But I wouldn't want to see them under 50 either. Okay. Not too cold, because then it just takes longer to heat them back up and get them in shape to be incubated.
Right.
And again, I can't say, and I don't mean to be redundant in what I say, but it all still goes back to the fact that, this is art and this is science, and the art part is kind of like baking bread, a lot of people can do it real well, and a whole lot of people can do it lousy, and that's what makes the world go around, and that's the same thing that happens, in this case.
Yeah. Peter, when we had Dr. McCrae on, she was saying that the magic number was 86, and that's when the embryo starts developing. And you're saying keep it above 70.
It below 70, too.
Keep it below 70,
yeah.
So the embryo doesn't develop. Is there, could you tell me the difference between that 16 degrees in, because
I don't know where she's getting her research from.
Isn't that what she told us?
Yeah, I believe that embryo starts to grow at 86 degrees.
At 86 degrees. And so I was under the impression that just keep those eggs below 80, say, and you'd probably, that does seem a little high, though, doesn't it?
It seems a little high to me, but I'm not going to poo-poo somebody else's stuff because I don't know what I don't understand that.
Okay, but with all your incubation, you're saying 70. Keep them at 70 or less.
I'd like to see it at. Here's the deal. Here's the deal. Arresting embryo development. The more you arrest the embryo development, the better off you are if you're holding eggs. They're developing irregardless of basically what the temperature is. It's just a very, very slow type of development. But it's been my experience and what I was taught when I actually did go to school many, many years ago, it was a breeder company in Canada, and I spent 2 weeks in a school there working and doing whatever they did all day long, and then half of it was actually in the hatchery, the other was in a classroom every day.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a wonderful
thing. I'd love to do that.
That's where all of the information basically came from. That's where my knowledge of all of this has come from, and it's just something that I think 86 is way too high myself. I think you're going to get a hell of a lot of embryo development prior to that, albeit slow. As that temperature picks up and gets closer to the ideal, there's no question that that they're going to take off and really grow. But this is a particular company is a world respected company, and they were dealing with high dollar birds. I mean, they were still chickens, but they were parent and grandparent stock. They're worth a lot of money. I mean, even to get on the premises was like trying to get into the White House. If your name wasn't on the list and you didn't have a purpose, and you had to go through a room to take a shower and change into clothes that they provided, shoes included, the whole nine yards. And when you went back out, you left everything behind, went to an air chamber that had a difference in pressure, so that. It's that important to them, because when they sell you those breeders, they're guaranteed to be free of certain particular diseases. They don't have Marek's, they don't have leucosis, they don't have pox, they don't have AE, they don't have any of that, so it's important to them, to do that, to keep their hatchery, like a hospital, better than a hospital. You can get sick in a hospital these days. I mean,
The hospital's a terrible place to be.
Well, yeah, it depends on the hospital, but you see how it develops. You all know a week ago, Sunday, I was in the emergency room, and they had a sign up on a wall said, anybody that comes in to examine you, touch you, or whatever, should wash their hands first. Well, I can tell you this, everybody that came in, they didn't want them to wash their hands. I don't know where they've been. So it's easy to spread stuff, it's kind of funny. And then a little tiny letters under the thing that says, if you're not observing this, you have a right to speak out. Yeah, fine. Then you're having a heart attack. They say, screw that guy down there in 414. Trip on your way down with the cart. No, I mean, it happens. And, I can't speak to the 86. I'll look into it a little bit, but I think that's way too high. And I think that, I can tell you this. We never kept anything around at 86 degrees. It was all 60, 65 degrees, and a low, if my memory serves me correctly, right around 55 degrees was the lowest.
Well, she didn't say to store them at that. She just said, store them at room temperature between, say, 40 and 70, but once you put them in the incubator and the inside of the egg starts to heat up, that embryo start and development will start to happen and grow at 86 degrees.
I will,
is that what it was? I understood with storing as well, but for me,
40 is too cold. Okay,
mm-hmm.
From my perspective, it just could be just a difference of opinion. I mean, I don't know where she gets her. I get mine from actual hands-on. As I read to you last time, when we were on a commercial break, I came back and told you how many chicks I'd hatched in that one particular 4 or 5 month period. I've earned my stripes that way. I don't know how she got hers. I can't tell you. I just don't know. But,
okay, well, it might have been. So Peter, here's something that I'm going to be brief hatching quite a bit. I mean, I've got an older sort of campus, college-type refrigerator, a little small thing. It'd probably be worth it to just plug that in and leave it about 55, 60 degrees and just store the eggs in there.
As long as you're going to have the humidity up high. Just
put one of those little wafers in there with the water so it can evaporate, would that be enough?
I don't know because it'd be based on volume, and I don't know. I'd play around with it. I would certainly want the humidity to be very high in there, as because it's going to take humidity out on you as well.
Right. Well, now how about then wrapping the eggs in plastic so that they're.
You could try that. We did it with a ours was a little bit more specialized, but I alluded to this once before where we did it with the Cryovac bag and put the eggs in the flats and then flushed it with nitrogen gas, and it's a double flush type thing. You flush it, you pull the bag together with the hose still in there, and then you flush it again and you pull the hose out and tie it off so that it stays that way. Then turn all the eggs upside down and put them in the egg case and go with it from there. And they did that only when they had a limited amount of birds to work with so that they could get a decent amount of birds out to evaluate at the end. But anything's worth a try, you know.
Not just on the side, but you'd actually turn the eggs upside down and then back right side up.
Because it helps to arrest the development of the birds in that. I'm trying to remember the exact reason. I have to look up some of this stuff, but it was a viable option at that point in time with those expensive type of birds. Where they were trying to make a decision whether they were going to expand this breeder flock into something viable, or they were just going to do away with it. You could experiment around with that and report back to us, see how it works out. Because, you know, last week, last week we had, I think it was Bard Rock in the chat room asked a question about birds that were feather picking and stuff, and. So I'll fill you all in on what went down with that. His name is Bob Rosbury, I guess Rosbury. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. If not, I hope he'll correct me. But at any rate, we put together a little trial that you normally don't see with backyard flocks. So what we're going to do, and Bob's got it all worked out on a spreadsheet and stuff, and we exchanged emails about the parameters that we're going to look at. But we're going to look at, and some of it will be a little bit subjective. But we're going to look at, you know, male, female, the feather quality, the color of the legs, the head, feed consumption, water consumption, overall appearance, a whole bunch of things that we're going to look at, and we can report back to you guys. And we're going to do I sent him some Replimin liquid, some A-lite amino acid, and some vitamin VitaPro B vitamins that I have here that I think are the best thing since sliced bread. But what we're going to do is we're going to do it one at a time. We're going to add things in, kind of like making a cake mix, so to speak. We're going to start out with the Replimin liquid, and we're going to give it a couple of weeks and see if the birds stop picking on their own, being in the same environment that they were in before. Same coop, same feed, same person taking care of them, the whole nine yards. So none of those parameters are going to change or hopefully have any influence on it. So And I have his permission to use his name. I asked for that because I think it's important people understand, you know, what we're doing, how we're trying to do it. And we're just trying to see. And the idea of this is to find out if it's nutritional or is this just a bunch of bad actors that just decided that there's some subordinate birds in this coop and we're just going to have fun with them and pick them apart. And in the ultimate end, we have the remedy for it, and he's got the pinless peepers and stuff. So then we're going to, let's say for argument's sake, we use the Replimin, and after 2 weeks we really don't see much of a change behavior-wise. I am almost certain as I'm standing here talking to you and would put money on it that he will see an improvement in the color of the birds. The feather quality won't change, but they should have a little bit more sheen and stuff like that. You can't take a broken feather and fix it with anything you're going to put in the water. But then we're going to take, so we'll assume for the moment that the Replimin doesn't work for the picking problem, and then we're going to put in the A-lite amino acid. And we're going to see by giving them a full complement, it's a concentrated form of amino acids, which are the building blocks and proteins of life that they need. So between that and the trace minerals that are chelated, let's see if they stop picking there. If they don't,
that'd be interesting.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really excited about it because this kind of stuff just doesn't happen with the backyard folks. And Bob seems it was his idea to put it all on a spreadsheet, and he asked, and I'll just be honest with you, he said, look, you know, if we're going to do this, why don't we figure out what we're going to do. And I say, hey, I'm all for it, you know, because, you know, so with his input, my input, we got this all worked out. But the last thing, if nothing works, we're going to put the VitaPro in. So you'll have the three products together. Then you'll have a full complement of vitamins, a full complement of amino acids, and a full complement of chelated trace minerals that have been proven to be deficient in most animals. So I think it's awesome. I'm really excited about it. And it'll be, you know, it'll be 6-8 weeks before we'll know anything for the most part. Well, 2 weeks before we know how things work. He should have got his stuff Saturday or maybe even today. But it's coming, and we're going to take care of all that kind of stuff and take a look at it. Also had a report back from, you might remember 2 or 3 weeks ago, a woman called in. She had a bird that wasn't doing well, and I sent her some stuff. The bird has improved. It's not 100%, but it's a lot better than what she was. The bird has gone back to eating now. She doesn't have to hand feed it and so on and so forth. So there are ways we can make some improvements with things out there for folks. There are others, that have sought my help and advice from this show and stuff, and I don't feel comfortable mentioning anybody's names, and I won't. But you know, they've gone on to doing better things with their birds and everything else. So it's an exciting time, I think.
It is. It's an exciting time
to have these kind of things that, you know, you only read about the big boys being able to do it. You know, the guy that's got the Purdue, the Tysons, and that kind of thing. So here it is on the Chicken Whisperer show with our wonderful backyard folks. We're going to find out, you know, what makes these birds tick.
Right. Well, it's a different ball game. The backyard is such a different ball game than the commercial. Peter, I've got another question for you. Mm-hmm. This Replimin I got from you, and I need to order another bottle, but is there any reason why I couldn't give that to day-old chicks and as they're growing out? Do they have too much iron for any reason? Or
No, but I wouldn't give it to them more than a couple times a week.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And the reason for that is the iron. Too much iron begets other problems.
Does it come Does it come in a preparation without the iron?
excuse me. Yeah, but I don't carry it, and because we've always found that the iron portion seems to just make the birds pick up their color a lot better, and that means that they're not getting the saturation of the hemoglobin of the blood with enough iron. So, they, in my opinion, from what I've seen over the years, I've been selling this a long, long time, and I think we have some birds out there that are deficient in iron, and that's why we see these things. They don't normally get iron. It's not a thing that you'll find, on the label of any chicken feed, you know, saying, you know, that they added this, they added that. But part of the reason for this is this chelation process is so extremely important to understand that it is. You know, I've got a program that I put out for racing pigeons and have since 1985. And I get the old timers arguing about wanting to use Replimin versus the rusty nail in the water. You tell them, look, you know, you're asking a bird to fly 150, 300 miles. You know, they need all the oxygen they can get. And, you know, he said, yeah, but I already put a nail in the water and it gets rusty and they get all the iron they need. Well, what they've gotten is rusty water. That's what they've gotten, because the system can't break it down, not in your lifetime, not in mine, not in Andy's child's lifetime, and any children that may come along after that. It's just not going to happen, okay? It has to be in a usable form. The same thing as, and I'm no nutritionist, but the same thing as protein. There's all kinds of protein, but then there's a usable protein. You know,
they're
one
not all equal, are they?
No, they are not. And so, you
they
know,
take food protein. Sometimes they're really, really crude.
Sometimes it's really crude, yeah. So it's all of those things, you know. You just and that's why it works. That's why I like that particular product. Easy to do. You just dump it in the water, forget about it for the day, and you're done.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I found if any of my flock has little, their combs seem just a little dull, I'll just start adding it to the water, and within a week or so, I'll notice, well, they've perked up. I mean,
yep.
I think they're especially.
I had at one point in time, okay, I had one of the best breeders of White Rocks. He's now dead, Shelby Harrington, very good friend of mine. He told me one time, he said, you know, I bought that from you and it didn't work. And I said to him, I said, well, Shelby, you can't use it on a bird that's in top form and expect it to make it that much better. I said, but, you know, when you've got a bird that should be in better condition than it is, and, you know, it's not where you want it to be, I said, put it in the water. I said, then tell me what you think. And that's exactly what he did. And he said, no, you're right. He said, I had a bird, you know. I wanted to bring it to the show. It wasn't coming around the way I wanted to. He said, I put it in the water. He said, the next day, he said, ready to go in the show cage. So, and it doesn't always work 100% for everybody. I'm trying to put this out here as any kind of miracle thing, but it does make a difference. And chelation.
Well, same thing in people. I mean, when people are anemic, they just can't carry the oxygen and have the energy that they've got.
Well, and part of that is not always, but part of it, especially in chickens, is a mild respiratory disease. Doesn't have to be something that's showing itself. But what happens is the pH of the blood changes, and then the hemoglobin cannot be saturated with enough oxygen.
Uh-huh.
So a bird at rest looks good. A bird under pressure that's being chased around the yard may turn cyanotic and blue. I've seen it many times. Okay? And then 20 minutes later, the bird looks a picture of health again. And that's part of the issue that we see lots of times. Okay? Because
tell
if I had a nickel for every time somebody told me that their bird just had a cold, I'd be retired.
What in the name of the product you were talking about?
The product is called Replimin Liquid with Iron.
There you go. Very
it's
good.
It's a really good product. It's not a... And we'll see. I mean, anybody that's hanging on the fence about it and thinking about it, just wait and we'll see. We'll see. We'll get an independent person's opinion of the three products. And I have given these products away before on the show. Okay, we had that gal that had that Easter egger that wouldn't lay eggs and stuff. We fixed that one, and that's what we used. So you know, I'm very confident in the product. Been selling it for a long time. I've seen. You know, the outcome from that particular product. Again, not trying to hawk it. It's up to you. It's your money. Not, I don't care one way or another. And,
but
it is.
But I can use it in baby chicks. I'll use
oh, yeah. It's not age-dependent whatsoever. It's just that the science shows that high blood levels of iron can beget certain bacterial diseases, can enhance the chances of getting it. So you just don't want to overdo it.
Okay. I might start taking a swig myself here, Peter.
Well, they started out on the human side, and they do make a product, a whole bunch of products. The original name of the company, I can't remember what they've changed to now. They were bought out, but the original name of the company, they may have kept the name for all I know, is Albion, A-L-B-I-O-N. If you go back and look, the original people that started the research on this, and every research report, and I haven't seen one in quite a few years now, but every research report back in the, you know, when I first started with this product, showed that their product versus other products, theirs was superior by far. And we've just stuck with it and proven that. And sometimes some of the simplest things are the best things.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Hey, let's go to commercial break here, and then when we come back, I'm going to give away a hen saver hen apron. We'll have the riddle and give away today's prize from you, Dr. Brown, and then we'll. I've got a couple of folks starting to get in line to ask a few questions for you as
work.
Well. So we can we'll go ahead and do that. Make sure we have time. We got limited time here on the radio show, so I want to make sure we try to cover everything and get everything done, especially answer those questions that people have that have been waiting to ask. So stay with us, folks. We'll return right after this short break from our sponsors.
Since 1921, Stromberg's has been a family-owned and operated business, providing quality poultry and poultry supplies to their customers. Today, the Stromberg family offers over 200 different breeds of poultry, including chickens, waterfowl, and game birds. They also offer poultry supplies for the beginner or advanced poultry keeper. Stromberg should be on the top of your list when it comes time to order. Shop online at www.strombergschickens.com or call today at 1-800-720-1134. Remember, that's strombergschickens.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. When you need an incubator, think Brincy, the incubation specialist. Brincy has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brincy.com. Brincy spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brincy.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brincy, technology you can trust.
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce, I'll don my super suit.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today, this Monday, episode of Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. And hey, Peter, whenever you're at an event where Pat Forman is the event speaker, how do you know? Yeah, when you're at an event with Pat Forman and you're out in the audience, and she walks in for the very first time, how do you know it's Pat Forman? Do you know the answer to that question?
No, be nice. Be nice.
You actually.
Let me see. No, I got the answer. I got it.
Okay.
I got it. Got a wine bottle in her hand.
No, that's not me. Peter.
Actually, you will hear.
And
this.
A coffee cup in the other, right?
Yeah, there you go. And a pumpernickel bagel.
Now that I might have
yeah. In my hand, but.
You'll actually hear this in the background as she walks on stage.
All right, down with her, down easy boy.
Gotta love it. All her fans just going crazy in the crowd. Compost queen, compost queen, compost queen. Gotta love it. Gotta love Pat Forman. Alrighty, hey, we got a great prize to give away, and it is a Hen Saver Hen Apron from Crazy K Farm. I'm gonna give that away first. A Hen Saver Hen Apron from Crazy K Farm, and we're gonna take Fast Fingers caller number three, if you know today's early bird secret password. So. Bottom line, if you were here on time like you should have been, and you know today's early bird secret password, and you haven't won anything from Crazy K Farm in the last 30 days, give us a call right now, 347-637-3237. That's 347-637-3237. And then when you do that, when you call in, press 1 to speak with the host, and we're going to take caller number 3. Caller number 3, if you know today's early bird secret password, then you're in store. You have a chance to win a Hen Saver Hen Apron. Again, caller number 3, 347-637-3237, if you know today's early bird secret password. And the switchboard is, of course, lighting up. Hang on just a second. Let me see where this static's coming from. Okay, let me try something else here. Got it. Okay. It's the doc's phone. I put him on mute and the static went away, so it's not a big deal. We can still hear you good, and it may just be on my end, so dealing with the switchboard, so I just wanted to see and pinpoint where that was coming from. Okay, we're going to the phone lines right now. That was real, real quick. Caller number 3 calling in from area code 570. 570, you're on the air. State your name. Tell us where you're calling from, please.
Holly from Shikshinny, Pennsylvania.
Holly from Pennsylvania, and I'm not even going to pronounce the city you're from. I might mess it up. gotta love it. Say it one more time for us.
Shikshinny.
Okay, yeah. I may, based on FCC rules and guidelines, I don't think I'm going to try that one. gotta love it. That's awesome. Thank you so much for listening up there. What is today's early bird secret password?
Shinny.
That is, well, yeah. Pat, is that right?
Yes, that is absolutely right.
Absolutely. That is
one. Did you hear at the beginning of the show or later in the conversation?
Oh, I got it at the beginning of the show.
Oh, you're awesome. Okay.
What was the secret word?
Guinea.
Okay. I thought you said shinny, and I was going to say shick shinny and shinny. There's something going on there.
Absolutely. All right, you have won that awesome.
Collusion.
You've won that Hen Saver Hen Apron from our good friends Crazy K Farm. All you have to do to claim your prize, very simple. Send me an email, chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net. Okay, it's chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net. Send me an email. In the subject line of the email, put Hen Saver. And then within the email, I need your name, physical shipping address, telephone number and email again. In the email, I just forward that over to Toby, the owner and creator of the Hen Saver Hen Apron, and we'll get that out to you. The reason why we need your phone number and email is because there's different styles that you may be able to choose from, different sizes, if you need one for a bantam size or a large fowl. So that's why we'll need that information. Chicken Whisper at chickenwhisper.net. Hen Saver in the subject line, name, sh- shipping address, phone number, and email, and we'll get that to you. We'll get that over to Toby, and she'll contact you and get that out to you as soon as possible. Now, let me get over here to my email. I'm going to read the day's riddle for you. If you tuned in last week, maybe you might have done some research on it to see if maybe you could figure out the answer. So let me come down here. Today's riddle. Here we go. And this is also kind of working along with our incubation series here. And Pat, pick a caller for this one.
Number six.
Okay, number six. Yeah, you broke up a little bit there, but I got that. Number six. Okay, here we go. Call number six, 347-637-3237. If you want to try to get the answer to this riddle, here we go. Clear my eyes here a little bit. Don't have my glasses on. Some say I am an early riser, but that does not make me any wiser. It is said that I am about 30, which is not bad for a developing little birdie. I am closer to 54, but even at that age, I am quite immature. I don't dance to Michael Jackson's Beat It or the King's Heartbreak Hotel. I have rhythm all my own. What am I? I'll read it one more time. Caller number six, 347-637-3237. Think about incubation here. Some say I am an early riser, but that does not make me any wiser. It is said that I'm about 30, which is not bad for a developing little birdie. I am closer to 54, but even at that age, I am quite immature. I don't dance to Michael Jackson's Beat It or to the King's Heartbreak Hotel. I have a rhythm all my own. What am I? Now, come on, guys. Think about this.
I did go over it, by the way, in
you
my
did.
Talk today. Yes, I did.
Yes, you did. Absolutely.
Specifically.
And little tip here. I think out of all of this, the hint would be I have a rhythm all my own. I mean, that's pretty much a giveaway. Mm. And then, of course, the giveaway, I mean, such giveaways here. I don't dance to Michael Jackson's Beat It or to the King's Heartbreak Hotel. I mean, you did such a fabulous job putting in some little secret hints there. So, caller number six, 347-637-3237. And the prize again, Peter?
It's a hanging feeder with a feed saver control. Holds about 30 pounds of feed. It's made by Cool Corporation, a company I'm closely associated with a lot of product that I handle of theirs. And it does have a small lid on the top to keep the birds from perching up on top of it.
347-637-3237. Come on, folks. Those are some hints right there. I mean,
this feeder's got a threaded stem in the middle, so the barrel of the feeder screws down onto this threaded stem in the middle so that you turn the barrel of the feeder to adjust the feed up and down. It eliminates all of those cotter pins, clevis pins, and whatever, and falling into the feed, and you have to dig through there to find it, or you can't find it at all, and later on you find out one of your chickens has swallowed it or whatever. So it's kind of a neat thing. I really like it, about a $22, $23 item, somewhere in that range.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any takers?
I'm still trying, Still, I'm not sure if these folks are on, well, one's obviously not, because we just asked a question, and they've been on hold for 26 minutes, probably just listening to the show, or maybe waiting to ask you a question, and so here we've got one here. Area code 203. 203, you're on the air. State your name. Tell us where you're calling, please.
Vanessa. I'm calling from Florida.
Vanessa from Florida. Very good. And what do you think the answer to the riddle is?
Is it a heartbeat?
Eddie, you call it. I'm not going to.
I'm thinking since we had this question last week, and then we had, of course, this week, and
I don't want to carry it over if we can help that.
She's the only one that's been brave enough to call to try to figure it out. I think she's just kind of right there in line with everything. I think we ought to give it to her.
Then you,
Pat, of course. Pat, even if she said a toenail, would give it to her. But,
you're real close. What we were talking about, seeing as how Andy said it's okay, then I'll go ahead and start dissecting it for you a little bit. When we were going through before the blow-by-blow of what takes place during the development of the embryo, we talked about the embryonic heart developing at about 30 hours. And so that's what it is. And if you look at it here, the first line just is telling you basically that it's something that develops early. And the rest of that sentence just makes it rhyme. It is said that I'm about 30, which is not bad for a developing little birdie. The heart is actually has a beat at 30 hours. I'm closer to 54, but even at that age, I'm quite immature. The reason I put that in is because I like to count the first 24 hours or so of incubation within the bird itself. So that would all be in line with what I said in my opening on today's show. That the heart beats around 30 hours, but it's really closer to 54. The Don't Dance to Michael Jackson's Beat It is just an indication of what we were talking about. King's Heartbreak Hotel goes to the same thing. And then, obviously, a heart has a rhythm once it gets rolling. So that was it. It wasn't actually the heartbeat itself, but you're close enough.
Right.
And, that's what we were talking about, And again, if for me, for my purposes, from my standpoint, I look at it as being 54 hours old. People might look at it being 30 hours old. I don't care which way you look at it. That's how I see it from where I sit. So we have the winner.
Awesome. Excellent. Okay, winner, just send me an email, chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net, chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net, and then put, if you'll put in there, chicken doctor in the email subject line, and then if you'll name, shipping address, phone number, and email in the email itself, again, that's chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net, all your shipping information and contact information. I'll get that over to Peter Brown. He'll get that awesome prize out to you. So we're looking at the heart, basically. This just came over the news wire, and it's a shame, but again, I use this educational. Barn fire claims animals in Maine. Next, we're going to take your calls. In fact, while I read this, let's go ahead and take your phone calls. If you have questions for Peter Brown, go ahead and do that for the last few minutes of the show. 347-637-3237. Many of you have sent me questions. If you want to call in and ask your question on air, we would welcome that. 347-637-3237. And we'll actually take your calls, take your chicken health questions for Peter Brown for the last segment of the radio show. Let me read this news post here that just came across while the phone calls start coming in. Again, 347-637-3237. When you call in, press 1 to speak with the host. We'll bring you on air. You can ask Peter your question. From Gouldsboro, Maine, a fire that swept through a barn in the Maine town of Gouldsboro. Ready for this? The fire killed horses, sheep, pigs, calves, and young ducklings and chickens, but no people were hurt, okay? Owner Bill Thayer said he tried to restore his three draft horses. Excuse me, rescue. My eyes got blurry there. Owner Bill Thayer said he tried to rescue his three draft horses, but was driven back by the intense heat. He said his wife was burned while trying to get 20 sheep out of the burning barn. Also killed were two pigs, two calves, and about 60 young chickens and ducks. Thayer tells the Bangor Daily News that the fire may have been started by a heat lamp.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't want to add insult to injury here. And regardless if they're in Maine or not, you know, again, this is the issue, is that when we talk about heating coops in the wintertime, and we say, you know, you have your full grown birds there, and most all places in the United States, heat is not needed in the whole nine yards. I don't pick on this too much because again, brooders need a heat source. There are more safe heat sources than other heat sources. Okay. We always recommend when we teach, if you're going to use a heat lamp, clamp it, duct tape it, chain it, weld it, you know, whatever you in the world have to do, because a little duct tape, a little extra chain, a little extra hit of a MIG welder, whatever it is, the time and effort to make sure that heat source is secure, that extra time is definitely not worth 20 sheep, 3 draft horses, 2 pigs, 2 calves. I mean, plus the whole barn that's burned to the ground, because the time lacking of making sure that heat source is secure. So I bring this to you because I don't know anybody else that does Chickens in the News like we do, but to educate folks on, again, issues and the importance of some of these things we talk about, like heating your coops in the winter. In this case, again, we've already reported this year about someone's house. Yep, their house burnt to the ground because they had a brooder in a little shed that was attached to the house. Their whole house burnt to the ground already this winter. This spring, we've talked about that. So I just share this with folks, not to add insult to injury, but to educate you on the seriousness of these heat sources. Whether you choose to heat your coops in the winter unnecessarily, in most cases, or yes, baby chicks and ducks need a heat source, but you know, you pick that heat source wisely and do what you can to actually to make it secure as possible, because accidents like this absolutely do happen. So let's get over here to the switchboard, and we'll take some calls here for Peter Brown. Let's go to the one who's been whole time. Let's see, we got a question here possibly from area code 949. 949, you have a question for Peter Brown?
Yeah, can you hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, I have a gold land dot that I've had for a while. I guess it kind of starts before this. A few weeks ago, I was out in the backyard, and in one of the poops, it almost looked like spaghetti noodles or something, and I asked my girlfriend if she had fed them noodles, and she said no, so we were concerned that it looked like worms. So we treated them with Wazine or Wazine or whatever, and we were going to do a follow-up treatment with ivermectin, and it's been about 2 weeks since the initial treatment, so we're going to do that because I thought it was roundworms. So I have this one land dot who looks really bad. She looks really dumpy. Her between her legs is all swollen. I saw her have like a yellow foamy poop a couple weeks ago, but not recently, and she just looks really dumpy and like depressed. I took her to the feed store. The guy there said that she was internally laying, but I'm not 100% sure he's right, because I think that I found eggs from her recently, and all the research that I've gone on to said that it's either internal laying, fecal worms, blackhead, or roundworms, and I was just wondering what's the way to tell for sure the difference between those, because if she's internally laying, there's nothing I can do, and I was going to call her, but if it's something I can treat, I'd like to treat her.
Great.
Yeah, the only way to really tell whether it's blackhead or not is to take a fresh dropping sample to your local veterinarian and let them look for it. If you've got a poultry lab, it's probably a little bit better if you could do that. They're more familiar with it. But it shouldn't be a big deal for any veterinarian worth a hoot to look at it under a microscope and determine whether there's actual protozoa there. That's what causes it. Generally, if you're going to see blackhead, you're going to see a lot of that butterscotch foamy dropping quite a bit. So hard to say. Usually if there's one, there's more. So I think I would lean away from that. I don't think I'd follow up with ivermectin. Your description of the worms, if you're being accurate, is a classic roundworm infestation. The ivermectin is not even a good roundworm wormer, so waste of time, waste of money. I'd come back with the Wazine again. I would do it in 10 days and give him another dose of it. And then I'd probably wait 3 or 4 more weeks, come back and do it again. I'd probably do it on some sort of regular basis with them, seeing as how you have had what I would call, judging from your terminology, an infestation of roundworms. They are the most common, and I don't see any point at this point in giving the ivermectin unless it were warranted for some other reason. But if you can get the dropping checked, I would go ahead and do that. As far as being an internal layer is concerned, relatively easy to figure out. Put her in a pen where she can be by herself for a little bit, couple of days and see if she lays an egg. It does not still preclude her from being an internal layer. Sometimes it's an anomaly. It happens. The bird will lay an egg or an ovum, basically, and the ovum drops into the body cavity. Continually doing that leads to egg yolk peritonitis, and once that sets in, there isn't a whole lot you can do about it. So, you know, it depends on... one of the ways you can tell is you can palpate the back end of the bird. Sometimes you can, you won't feel an egg, but you'll feel a mass there. If the bird's overly fat, that may preclude you then from being able to feel that egg mass. But also you can tell because they start to, the legs start to push out and they start to waddle like a duck a little bit. Okay, the more pronounced that becomes, or the more your ovums that are dropped into the body cavity, the wider that stance becomes because their body just can't handle it all. Eventually, they go into kidney failure, respiratory distress, so on and so forth. Culling the bird is up to you based on whatever findings you have on your end. It's hard to say how long it's been going on. The only other way to try to save the bird is to make her stop laying if she is laying. The fact that she doesn't drop an egg out on the floor for you still doesn't mean she isn't an internal layer, but it might give you some idea of what's going on if you don't see an egg in the coop or enclosure that you would have the bird in. So you can take a look at it from that standpoint. I think that's how I would handle it first. And they will sit around and be dumpy on you and give you indications of maybe other diseases that are not really true. When your vet or your poultry lab does this fecal, they can also look for worm eggs. They can look for coccidiosis. They can look for the blackhead. So they can do a lot with one simple sample, and it shouldn't. Either way, poultry lab should do it for free for the most part, and your veterinarian haven't got a clue as to what they might charge. That's the way I'd approach it. If you decide that you want to try to save the bird and you think she is an internal layer, depending on where you're located, depending on what the temperatures are, and you have to be the judge of that, no food and water for 24 hours. After that, just water for the next day or so. After the second day, scratch grains and water in a dark-out box, no more than 8 hours of light a day. And hopefully, you can make her stop laying and possibly save the bird if indeed she is an internal layer. But it's a tough deal. Works better for birds that are prolapsed than it does for birds that are, already. Because most of the time, by the time you find a bird that's an internal layer, there's not one in there, especially if she's feeling dumpy like that. There's probably a bunch. That'd be my guess from where I'm sitting, just based on experience. But that's what I would do.
Great, very good. The next caller has been on hold for a little while. Area code 270. State your name. Tell us where you're calling from, please. Area code 270. You have a question for Peter Brown?
Yes. I didn't know if you could hear me or not. I have a little rooster that has he'd gotten pecked in the eye, and it's the eyeball is swollen. The eyeball just doesn't look right. It's like looking into somebody's eyes when nobody's home up there. The other eye looks fine, but this one is not shaped right, and I think he's probably going to lose that eye, but it's very swollen all around it, and it looks like it might be infected. I didn't have anything here except some Quadratop ointment, and I wasn't sure about using that, and I gave him a half cc of Thailand 50, which I didn't know if that would help or not, but it was, in my opinion, still better than doing nothing until I could get a call in and see what to do with him.
Person after my own heart with the doing something better than nothing. You can stand around and have your fingers folded up, or you can stand around and watch them die, or you can do something. So you'd be commended for doing something. But you do have something you can start with right there in your hands. Take that Thailand 50, because I can't see this bird. So I'm going to go by what you're saying, but lots of times what happens is that the eye becomes so swollen that it pushes the eyeball itself further into the eye socket, deeper into the head, and the outside is just all swollen tissue. So when you go to look for it, oh my God, there is no eye, and it's very, very difficult, to see the eye at that point.
I put two drops of the Thailand 50 directly onto the eyeball. I thought, well, it's it's already injured, it's not going to make it any worse.
No, what I would do is a couple times a day, see if you can't take that eye, open it, and put a drop or two of the Thailand 50 directly in there without a needle on the syringe, and then just hold the eye lid together for 10 or 15 seconds and then let it go. If you do that two or three times a day, see what's going on with it, see if that helps it. It should help if there's a bacterial infection there. If not, you're going to have to, if you so choose to move up to something else, you can go to the website. We've got the Neopoly dexamethasone. Dexamethasone will help take that swelling down. You can send me a picture of the eye if you're capable of doing so on the internet at chickendr@firststatevetsupply.com. I'd be glad to take a look at it and see and make any other kind of recommendation. But generally, if you've got something there, I'd go with that first, okay? And try to do it two or three times a day. If you did it early in the morning, you know, when you're first out with them, and then maybe a little after lunch and then a little bit after dinner, I think that, you know, it might be beneficial that way. I don't think you're going to get anywhere injecting it into the bird. It's just not going to be able to give them enough without killing them to get enough up into that eye socket that it's going to do anything. Your best bet is to go right into the eye, put a couple of drops in there like you've been doing, and keep fingers crossed same time.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate
it. You're welcome. Keep in touch.
All righty, very good. Let's heading down the road here. Looks like, let's see who's next as far as on hold time. Area code 229. 229, you're on the air with Peter Brown, the chicken doctor. What's your question?
Well, I got a question about coccidiosis, and I suspect my chickens have it, but I have not seen any bloody droppings, but they're really loose. I think about giving some medicine for them, but I'm nervous about the fact that this is water soluble because I have so much water, and so many animals drink from all the animal. I don't want everybody being medicated.
So is there a way to treat for coccidiosis with something that's not water-soluble? Because you have many different things that are drinking out of the same water, or we can treat individual birds. Is that right, Kevin?
That's right.
Okay. Doc?
Not really. Not unless you're going to... I'm assuming that this would be a question about treating non-target animals, such as dog, cat, and so on and so forth. I don't see that the Ampril would be the drug of choice in this particular case. Really not happy about having animals that shouldn't be drinking it, and I would make every effort to exclude them, from it. How many birds are we talking about?
I'm thinking two or three out of seven chickens.
So two or three out of seven?
Yeah.
Okay, because it's not clear on my end. Two or three out of seven. So the only way that you're going to do that without putting something in the water is use sulfadimethoxine tablets. And if you send me an email, chickendr@firststatevetsupply.com, I will send you some to see how it works for you. It's annoying. It's a pain in the neck. You're going to pick them up at least once a day and give them a dose of this. You might even have to split the tablets up. I can't remember what size I've got here, but I'll give you directions on how to use them.
Kevin will do that.
Yes, absolutely. Kevin has no problems with that.
Yeah, you just again, it will be an issue with eating the eggs, and that's on you as far as that's concerned, because.
The eggs are already a hole because they're being medicated, and I'm all mixed feelings on eating them afterwards. But
well, again, we've been over it numerous times on the show what the rules are for eating eggs from birds that are being medicated, and it's. Under the Food and Drug Administration regulations, it's crystal clear, but I'm not sure how many people could afford to do that.
Right, right.
Okay, let's go to another. We got two here, and I want to make sure I get to 10 minutes left. So let's go to, thanks for your call, Kevin. Appreciate it. And a caller from area code 740. 740, you're live on the air.
Hello.
Hey.
I was calling, I got 2 weeks ago, I got some crested Peking ducks, and I got two of them. And one died right away, and the other one is still alive. But he holds his head to the side, and he staggers when he walks, and he eats and drinks just the same. You know, he kind of eats and drinks to the side with difficulty. He has, like, three little lumps on his head. They're not real little. They're little to me, but to him, with his little body, they're big. And they, when I touch them, they appear to be, like, maybe water-filled. And I was just wondering what possibly be wrong with him, and also if this is possibly something that, like, my other ducks or chickens or geese or even maybe my children could even, you know, get, you know, should not be exposed to.
Don't know. Sounds to me as though they're, you know, there may be the other one. I'm assuming you got these as babies.
Yes, I got them from a reputable dealer. I bought some Peking ducks, and I just thought, well, I'll throw a couple of these crested ones in there just for the heck of it. You know, I never seen
right.
them before, and I thought, well, you know, I'll get a couple of them.
Right.
And it was the crested ones that I have the problem with.
And how old were they when you bought them?
They were born on Monday, and they shipped them right out, and I got them on, like, Tuesday, 2 weeks ago.
Generally, when you have this kind of problem, I don't know. I'll tell you that right up front. I don't know what's wrong with the one with the swellings on their head. I don't think it's something that's going to transfer to a human. Can't be sure. But generally, when we get this kind of mortality right up front, it's a hatchery-related problem, or it's coming from the place wherever you bought them. Doesn't matter how reputable they are. If you hatch enough chickens, you're going to have, or ducks, or turkeys, or geese, or whatever, you're eventually going to have some problems. So I'm not trying to say they're giving you poor quality or whatever. When you, these things are, you know, they can look good 1 minute and they can be dead the next. We all know that. So, but generally, when you get that kind of mortality right out of the box, it's a hatchery. Related problem. Usually we look at anything from under 7 days backward being a hatchery related problem, and then from 7+ days ahead being your problem, you know, on your end. Generally speaking, you know, it depends on when they were actually hatched and when they were actually shipped. That can make a huge difference in the survival of a chick or a duckling or whatever. So that can be a related factor. I don't know when you got them, whether they went right to the feed and the water and started eating and drinking and that kind of thing. But, you know, all of that plays into it. Now, as far as this other one, I mean, I just can't say. I've not run into to this particular problem. I would call the people that I bought them from and discuss it with them. I think they owe you at least that much, and they probably will, you know, want to discuss it with you. I know if I was selling them and somebody called me with this kind of an anomaly, I'd want to know just what went on. And they could tell you, you know, when they actually hatched in relation to when they shipped. You know, if you look at a chick having roughly we always use the thing of 72 hours from hatching. They can go without food and water. Well, when you get out to 72 hours, you're stretching it. I can't say in your instance whether that one was hatched before the other. I don't know how they hatch. I don't know you know, whether it's incubated or not or whatever. But, you know, when they hatch early, they're ahead of everybody else. If you, just for argument's sake, and it can happen, if you have chicks that hatch 2-3 hours before everybody else, you don't have 72 hours with the three that hatch 3 hours early. You know, you're down 68 hours, 69 hours. and it keeps, you know, dropping from there. Every minute they sit around the hatchery and aren't on their way to you, it can be detrimental to their health. So early mortality usually lays back, in my, not only my opinion, but it's always been that way, that lays back on the source of where they came from, whether it's a hatchery or an individual. And best I can do for you.
All right, we've got one more we're going to try to squeeze in here before the end of the show. Caller calling in from area code 251. 251, state your question for Peter Brown.
Yes, I had a question about the Wising. I don't have the bottle with me, so I don't know the ratio to use, but from what I remember, it was so much per gallon per 200 or 300 chickens.
Okay.
What would you do in that situation if you had less than 10 chickens?
Hang on a second here. I can give you the dose on that right quick, make it easy for you.
And while you're looking that up, that's one great thing. When you purchase anything from Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, at his website, firststatevetsupply.com, that's firststatevetsupply.com, when you buy stuff, medication or anything like that that you're going to give to your birds, it'll actually come with dosing for your small backyard flock. Versus mixing, you know, 300 gallons of water for 80,000 chickens or whatever the case may be, that's one of the great things by ordering from him, is you'll get that in the package of the actual dose for your small flock. So just to give that tip out to everybody, if you're thinking about getting something and need that dose, he includes that when you purchase things from him.
And we don't give it to you in mice type either. We give it to you in a 20-point font that's readable. And it actually will come down a separate sheet of paper, and it'll have at the top of that, highlighted in yellow, it'll have directions for use on poultry. But anyway, in answer to his question, it's 2 tablespoons per gallon of water for 1 day, repeat it in 10 days, and basically you're looking at roundworms only.
Okay. You got that, caller?
I do. Thank you.
Very good. Hey, thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for your call. And that's going to wrap it up for another awesome episode of Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. And he joins us every Monday. He's also the owner and founder of firststatevetsupply.com. You can find him online. It has an awesome online store. They're in the middle of upgrading his website as we speak. I've seen the preliminaries of that, and it looks absolutely fabulous. So, Peter, we thank you very much for, again, taking some time out of your Monday and joining us here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken.
My pleasure. And I just want to mention real quick, we got just a minute. I'm not doing it. I'm going to be the guest speaker, but we are going to have that Backyard Poultry Health Seminar June 16th over in Harrisonburg, Virginia, at the Rockingham Co-op Farm Bureau Co-op Conference Room. And they can contact Alan Estep, 540-896-6646, or Bobby Morris at 540-421-5454. And I just thought I'd tell everybody, anybody that's a paying participant will receive a full-color disease poster with their which is a $14.95 value on my website, so for $25 that this will cost. But just quickly, some of the things we're going to go over, not limited to this. We will take questions, and I will be there all day for whatever basically it takes. So Newcastle, bronchitis, aspergillosis, gout, blackhead, coccidiosis, CRD, coryza, favus, fowl pox, Merrick's, LT, salmonella pallorum, ear canker, vent leet, worms, salpingitis, avian tuberculosis, Manson's eye worm, bumblefoot. We'll discuss medications and their uses and directions on how much to give, when to give it, and how long to give it. There'll be a demonstration that you'll participate in on how to properly vaccinate birds for pox. And then I was asked to do a demonstration on how to properly inject in the breast muscle birds that you want to use an intramuscular medication on. So all of these things will be gone over for $25, not a bad deal.
Wow.
I'd like to try to mention it every week I can up until the time that it goes on, but it's right over in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Anybody living close by can get up with those two folks. If you don't remember what I said, send me an email. I'll get you the information. But I don't know how many people he's intending to have. I personally don't care whether it's 1 or 100, so it makes no difference to me. But this will all be with color disease slides for most of these diseases. You know, bear in mind that if you're not for up for looking at blood and guts, you might want to turn your head a time or two. But we will have guts to look at in slides of coccidiosis and a whole bunch of other things, Marek's and so on and so forth. We can sit and talk about it all day long. Do whatever you want to do. This is a written agenda, but we're not set in concrete to follow it by any means. We can go off track. We can do whatever we want. We can talk about incubation. For me, it doesn't matter. You all know that. I don't care. I'll talk about whatever you all want to talk about. So,
hey, awesome. We got 20 seconds left, or actually 30 seconds left.
It's all yours. I thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Pat, and also thank you for joining us. I'm going to go ahead and take it from here since we only got 25 seconds, but thank you very much, my co-host Pat Foreman, for joining us today. Of course, Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor, and we'll see you all tomorrow with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. So long, everybody. ¶¶